Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dan Aronson, and welcome to another stellar issue of Press One for Democracy. We got a couple of different issues entangled on hand, trying to match the dots up and draw the quid pro quo line for SCOTUS that, for some reason, they did not feel was there during the Citizens United decision. Of course, we've got McCutcheon v. FEC coming out here any second now, and we're trying to avoid the same kind of thing. As a matter of fact, why don't we get right to it, and I will read the post on the from the Facebook page this morning, and let you know exactly what's going on here this evening. Many politicians claim the vast majority of subsidies are going to the entrepreneurs, who are often called cited as the job creators. However, according to a study just released by taxpayer watchdog group Good Jobs First, the lion's share of subsidy dollars are actually given to established, highly profitable corporations, a.k.a. big donors. In fact, 75% of all state and local subsidies are going to just 965 major companies. At the same time, these one percenters are staging hostile takeovers of the ruling parties, demanding bigger voices in crafting policies and strategies. So here's our question to SCOTUS. How can't you see this as the quid pro quo behavior you said was necessary to prove money's corrupting influence on government? This denial of obvious fact has already led to the aberration Citizens United, the abhorrent Citizens United decision, and it may well be the basis for a calamitous outcome in McCutcheon v. FEC. When are we, the people, going to demand justice? So that is it. So we've got two basic things here, and for some reason, the Supreme Court doesn't see them as intertwined, and I can't see how that it possibly is. So the biggest donors, we've got the biggest donors in the world out there openly saying, we want a bigger part, a bigger hand in crafting party policy and party strategy. And the Republicans, you know, this has been going on for a couple years for them, of course, after they failed to oust President Obama in 2012, the big donors wanted results, and let's face it. If you're going to buy results, or if you're going to give a lot of money in order to buy results, then darn it, don't you want results? I mean, that's the value proposition, right? It's quite simple, right? A lot of times we talked about taxation on this show, a taxation and expenditures by the federal government. And what is often concluded is that it's not about how big or small the investment is or how big or large the expenditure is. It's about value. Right, we don't mind paying high taxes if we're getting good value. We do mind paying high taxes if we're not getting good value from our money. Well, to come full circle, right, so let's talk about that, because it is our tax dollars that are going to subsidize these highly profitable, already highly profitable companies. And a lot of times they talk about, in terms of oil, we turn about big agri, big pharma, you know, those are kind of the easier targets, but when you look at this list, and I will get it up here into the chat room. I will get the I apologize. I don't have the URL in front of me this very second, but we'll get it into the chat room ASAP. And we will you'll be able to see for yourself exactly who the top recipients of subsidies are. And there it is, right? So now it's there for the chat room, so you can click on that link and you can see where your tax dollars are going. Now, this particular study to be interesting because it speaks to corporate subsidies on the state and local levels. So for everything you're seeing here, you're not really seeing those huge federal subsidies to the big oil and the big pharma. Those are on top of this, right? Right? But we also know that they are obviously going to the 1%. We know that as well. As I'm sure there are a few people in there that are deserving and, you know, potentially job creators. But for the most part, the people that are on this list are taking their jobs elsewhere. They're certainly not creating new jobs here for the most part. And so why is it that our tax dollars are going to pay for those subsidies? So that is the show tonight. This is Dan Aronson. You're listening to Press One for Democracy. The number to call in here and participate in the show is 646-929-2495. Again, that's 646-929-2495. When the nice British lady greets you, she will tell you, press 1 to be put into the host queue, and that'll let me know that you are ready to come in and stand up and be heard, pro, con, or otherwise. We want to hear from you tonight as to why it is that our tax dollars are going to subsidize these hugely profitable companies, and B, why is it that SCOTUS does not see these donors standing up and saying, we want a larger voice in crafting party policy and party strategy, is not a blatant corruption of the system. Can they really make it? I mean, the one thing that came to mind to me was it could be as sketchy or as thin as this. Parties are corporations. They're not-for-profit corporations, actually, right? They are not the government. So that is the only very, very thin line I could see somebody tightrope walking to try to convince me that this is not a direct corruption of our democracy. Because obviously, if the Republicans and the Democrats hold 99% of the seats in the House of Representatives and 99% of the seats in the Senate, I think there's a couple of independents. I know Bernie Sanders is in there. I don't know if there's any others. So maybe only 98%, or maybe even, yep, maybe 98% of the seats in the Senate, and they certainly hold the deed to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, then how is buying the party policy and party politics not directly buying influence in the government? I can't figure it out. Hopefully, again, you can. So as always, we had some interesting dialogue going on in the on the Facebook page, and so I wanted to share a few of those with you because those folks a lot of times can't make it with us. The first comment was from Sean Bracken, who said they forgot to say the job creators who then take our money and run to China where they create jobs, and obviously something that regular listeners to the show will know that I feel very strongly is going to only be exacerbated by the TPP and the TTIP, these two trade agreements that are being negotiated by the USTR under the auspices of the White House. That's only going to get worse. And so some of the other things that were put on there was, John Bleakley, one of our regular libertarian contributors, mentioned the TPP. It's unconstitutional, but representative of what big government does with impunity, since the electorate is beholden to the two-party system and obsessed with fealty of government that insists that it take care of us from cradle to grave. So that would be the liberty perspective, or at least one of them. Glenn Chundluck said, who says they can't see it? So I guess Glenn is of the opinion that SCOTUS has become as corrupt, and it's so hard for me to believe that, but I'm beginning to see that there might be some validity to that argument, that SCOTUS has become as corrupt as the White House and as Congress has become. And if that's true, then we are in trouble because, of course, the Constitution gave us this wonderful system of checks and balances where we have three branches, each of which are checking and balancing each other. And the one portion of the government that's supposed to be totally uncorruptible because, of course, its members are lifetime appointees is the Supreme Court. If we've lost that, that jurisprudence, then I don't know, it might be ballgame, folks. Let's see. Robin Quinn said, just like money going to farms is not going to mom and pop farms, but to the mega industrial owned super farms. So, I don't know, everybody seems to be able to see it, but the Supreme Court. So we're not actually able to figure it out. And of course, then we got into the inevitable finger pointing and who's whoing on who's contributors when we started to talk about the big voter or the big donors that are demanding a bigger voice within their parties. You know, inevitably we end up with this argument about, well, you know, the people that are right-wing, supporting right-wing super PACs are evil, and the people supporting left-wing super PACs are good. And, you know, somehow there's a difference between good money and evil money, and good corruption and bad corruption. I guess that's it. I guess good corruption might be defined as people who are buying influence in Washington who happen to want, by some accident, the same thing you do. So you figure, oh, well, that's good corruption. That's okay, because they're fighting for the right side, which is, of course, our side, right? But to me, this is it's a little bit of silliness and a little bit of I think one of the problems that is really hurting us in this fight against corruption and keeping us divided, left be right, is that in the end, and I started to get into this with my good friend Greg Rusick, who I'm sure will be calling in soon to talk about it, because I don't want to plead his case for him. But my side of the case is this: does it really matter? Can anyone envision a system where the money that's coming in is somehow judged to be good or not good? Or, quite what I believe is the case, is quite logically, you simply have to bar it all. You can't say, you know, well, unions are good, but the Koch brothers are bad. That may be very well true. I probably wouldn't argue that very strongly against you if you took that position, Greg Rusick. But that's not the point. The point is that if we're going to banish special interest money in politics and the influence thereof, we're going to have to banish all of it. Like I said, unless you have a different opinion, in which case feel free to call in at 646-929-2495 and tell me otherwise. And our good friend Bobby Rodrigo apparently has decided he's going to tell me otherwise.
I don't know. Hello. How are you?
Bobby, we're barely hearing you, boss.
Hold on, I'll fix that.
Thank you, sir.
Is that better?
That is much better. Bobby's got all the good toys. But sometimes the toys fail us.
I'm on my way to Tallahassee, so I was on the I don't know if I'm going to say otherwise to you. I might reach out and say otherwise to Greg, since you partake something that he said. You know, come on, Greg. But anyway, one of the things that I like to bring up when this discussion happens is in 2012, and I've talked about this a couple of different times over the last couple of years, but in 2012, the Elections Committee, members of the Election Committee came out with an opinion, a memorandum, based upon a question that was brought before it by people who were members of unions. And the FEC stated that it was okay for corporations and unions under the rule of law that was established by the Supreme Court and Citizens United, for them to basically order their employees and not pay them at the same time, or order their membership to go to specified political rallies. And it was okay, which, of course, that thing blew my mind. And I posted this memorandum on Coffee Party many times. And it's easy to find, actually, on the Internet if one looks it up. And this was part of the discussion that was going on when CEOs were sending out letters saying, if you vote for Obama, I'm going to fire you and stuff. So this is part of that discussion that was going on. And for me, that pretty much sells what you're saying to everybody and should make it very simple. if anybody that can tell you where you have to hang your hat, whether you want to be there or not, and then at the same time not pay you for the time while they're taking you away from your work, I mean, that just shows how really, really bad we are. There's no question that all the money is bad. I think I mentioned to you I went to a Republican debate here in Georgia for the United States Senate, and I went to question Congressman Jack Kingston. And it was an absurd thing that happened. I go to question him, and I handed him my card and told him who I was, and I already had interviewed somebody, and I was there the whole night. I had my media pass on. And he says, "I don't know your organization. You might be a George Soros plant." And it literally ran from me, and we got him on camera. We're fixing to fix that here in a minute to go viral.
You told this story last week, and I got to let me interrupt you for half a second because I'd like you to expand on it a little bit. And that is, what I don't understand is you might be a George Soros plant, and he runs away from you. Why? How can you enter a campaign, a political campaign, and be scared to talk to somebody who might be for the other guy?
I'm so with you on that. That is exactly the point of that whole incident. And I'm thinking, did that really just happen? I mean, there's just no way I was just standing here and really just happened. And I turn around and the guy, Ted Metz, who was with me, who was running the camera, because he had filmed the whole debate for one of the candidates. And then him and I got together, and we were going to do the interviews together. We did do interviews together. And the fact that that happened was absurd. Now, what really was going on was I was there representing people against the NDAA, and Kingston, of course, voted for the indefinite detention provision. And I gave him my card telling him, this is who I am. I'm the National Bank Coordinator for People Against the NDAA. And he just got vilified by one of the candidates, Paul Brown and Phil Gingrey, all who voted for this, just got called out on that very thing during the debate. And I just wanted a simple question. I want to know if do you feel that that's constitutional and why? I was trying to do this journalism thing. But he ran. And he said, because you might be a George Soros thing. I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm here as a voter. I don't care who's, like you say. It was so absurd, but that's what he did. It was amazing. And that's how ridiculous this situation is that we're dealing with these politicians. And Kingston is a complete sellout. He's all about big money. He always votes that way. And, for me, it's always about the voting record of these guys. That's pretty much how you can hold their feet to the fire on all of this, on the money and the constitutional violations and stuff that they have. But it was an amazing thing that goes on. And it's basically, like you said, what they're doing, all this money, is co-opting our ability to have a voice regardless. Even if we want to have a voice, even if they agree with us, we have no voice.
Yep. Well, and that was something that was a little bit I had a sentence that I put into my post this morning, and I was trying to figure out where it went, and it really kind of ruined it. It kind of ruined the flow, so I took it out. And that sentence was it was attached to the part where it talked about the big donors wanting more power within their parties. And it basically said, if you don't, but hey, guess what? If you don't have a couple of million bucks to spread around, then your party doesn't care about you, your family, or your future, not because it's evil, but because it cannot afford to.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't
see you.
And
so, as Lawrence Lessig said, because we have a system of government for the funders, by the funder, of the funders, for the funders, and by the funders, as opposed to what it's supposed to be.
Instead of the founding fathers, we have the funding fathers.
Exactly. Exactly. Well,
it is pretty amazing.
Yeah, our little plan worked, and it looks like Mr. Gregg is ready to jump into the fray. So, and tell me, and I love the fact that he's willing to do so and tell me why I'm wrong, because very few people are willing to stand up to me. No, that's not true. I'm kidding. Because I'm wrong all the time, and I admit to being wrong all the time, and I promise I'll be wrong again. So, good evening, Mr. Russick. How are you?
This is the dog. Is this the Pavlov show?
No, you know what? I hope it's not Pavlovian. I always like to think that it's more like I'm the hunter in the underbrush on the bank, and I float my little duckies, and I give my little duck call, you know, Greg, come on. You know, it's just you just can't resist the lure. So I hope it's a little bit – I hope it's a little bit above Pavlovian trickery.
Hey, Dan, you know I would call in even if you didn't pause me off, you know, on the air. So I will say this. It's a topic near and dear to my heart, as you well know. And as you do know, I do have my own feelings about, you know, what kinds of approaches and policies would work better than what we're doing today. But I hope you would also give me some credit in my consistent support and advocacy for the American Anti-Corruption Act, which is designed to take all of the big and dark money out of politics. And I've never qualified my support for that by saying anything like, except for the causes that I support. I'm totally behind the idea, completely. I support what Represent.us is doing, what Lawrence Lessig and others have done to create that model legislation. I promote it on every opportunity I can, including on yours, on your Facebook page on a regular basis. And, you know, there are degrees of difference. I don't think both sides are equally at fault for the problems that we face today, and that could be a couple of shows all by itself. But I took a look at some numbers that I thought were pretty interesting back to your original post today, and I thought it would be interesting to take a look at, you know, what the financial condition is actually like for some of these companies that are getting all this money. And if you don't mind, I'd like to share a couple of those numbers with you and with your audience.
Share away.
Okay. So the number one recipient on this list is Boeing. Everyone knows Boeing's a pretty big company, right? Last year, according to their annual report, their total revenues were $86.6 billion, that's with a B, boy, billion dollars. Their net income was $4.6 billion. So they took in almost $87 billion of that. They had net income that accrued to their shareholders of $4.6 billion, and yet they are number one on this list of, I guess it's local and state subsidies. That the math just doesn't seem to work. I mean, the logic doesn't seem to work. I guess the math works to their advantage, but the logic doesn't make any sense if you think about why a company that's that big and that profitable ought to be getting anything for free from us, because it is our money, right?
Right. So here's what I read into the article. I read into the article and the report, and I will admit readily to having read into it, and I plan on getting in touch with these folks at Good Jobs First and asking them. But what I read into it was, let's say Boeing is going to start producing a new aircraft and it needs to expand its production facilities. And by the way, I do happen to know, having read this recently, and I'll be happy to prove, you know, get approved charge if we need it. But Boeing is having, I mean, their business is just through the roof. American Airlines, I mean, not American Airlines, the company, but domestic airlines are ordering more new planes now than they have been in decades. So I know Boeing's got to be doing well. So now I have to expand my production facility. So I start looking around, and I start, you know, what do? I leak that out there, right? I said, hey, I'm looking for a place to build some airplanes. Now, there are not too many places out there that are ready to build airplanes, right? If there's a humongous facility and specific types of facilities, like very, very, very long, huge, hollow buildings, right? So a couple of people start saying, well, I've got a place, and now this, you know, one place in Texas says, well, I've got a place, and I'll tell you what, if you come down here, I'm going to give you these tax breaks for the first 5 years, because I'm going to be able to be a hero as a politician, because I'm going to be able to say, I brought Boeing here, and I created 1,000 new jobs. I gave it away on the back end in tax breaks, but hey, that's not important, is it? People are working and happy. I think a lot of it is those kinds of subsidies.
I have a question on that presentation that Greg did. My question is based upon some of your preamble, Greg, is okay, I get the thing that you just said, but do you believe that just Boeing alone, don't even have to go to anybody else, all of that is happening with Boeing from the right? Or do you believe that it's happening from the right and the left? Or do you believe it's happening from the left? And do you? I know you don't like it. I mean, you're very consistent about that. But on based upon your preamble, do you think that Boeing is only getting these subsidies from the right?
Well, in the case of Boeing, I think the answer to your question, Bobby, is no. It does happen in both parties. There's no doubt about that. But if I'm not mistaken, Dan, and you may have already done this homework, isn't Boeing moving in a big way to one of the so-called right-to-work states in the South? Isn't it South Carolina? Because labor will be cheaper, and they will get all these tax breaks. And we know that South Carolina is not controlled by Democrats.
Why does that matter? Why does that matter that Boeing might, you know, part of Boeing might be moving there when we're talking about subsidies coming? I mean, okay, locally it would matter, you know, obviously. I mean, we have 30-something states that are all red, and we have so many states that are all blue. But right. If you look, I think Dan was the one that turned this on to the page originally. If you go back and look at forget the one you're looking at for the moment. If you go back and look at that page that discusses, and I know it comes up on Google, that discusses what every single local municipality, every state, every county, the subsidies that are given out by every single town and every single state in this country is listed right on the internet, and we've all seen it. And if you go through that, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it is being done. The evil is being spread. You know, it's just like Dan had told us, actually he told me, I don't know if you were the first time to see this, but the Open Secrets page. You know, it's just very, very informative when it comes to how our millionaires in Congress. And if you look at the list, as Dan pointed out, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, that once you get past the first guy, the what's his name?
Daryl Issa. Daryl Issa.
Yes, Issa from California. Once you get past him, you've got like five Democrats coming.
Right.
You know, it is.
Yeah,
anyway.
Bobby, I'm not disagreeing with any of that. The facts are what they are, that we are ruled by the wealthy elite, and that is a truism on both sides of the aisle. I'm not disputing any of that. Not for a second.
Hold on a second. I just want to tell everybody who's listening that I'm about to put a link into. I hope it works. I'm putting a link into the the chat room. I actually did look up Boeing's history of donations. Goes back to looks like to 1996, and. Oh, there's those 8 pages before it gets to the next. And I can tell you that each number, as far as donations is concerned, the smallest one I'm seeing is 20K. Oh, here's one, a small one for 16K. And it tells you exactly, like, these are for, like, dinners. They talk about, like, in 1995, it was a Republican State House dinner trust that they gave to in Arlington, Virginia. So they gave House Republicans, I guess that's what State House Republicans, 16 grand. And then there's, of course, DSCC. So, you know, here's 20 grand to somebody else. And it's funny because it's all out of Arlington, Virginia. So apparently that's where their donation engine is. There's one in Seattle for 50 grand to Senate, maybe it's Senate and House Dinner and Trust. Maybe it's S&H. I'm trying to figure out what this means. But anyway, but I don't know if the link pulls it up for you. But yeah, it does. If you click on the link in the chat page, you will get to a very lengthy list of contributions, and you'll see that, yeah, they're playing both sides against the middle. And that, I think, is the new game, right? The new game is I'll just give it to both people. Although in that interview that you taped, Bobby, that was awesome, with the guy who wrote Dirty Wars?
Right, Jeremy Scahill. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was very specific to say, and I assume that sources are out there, is that the Democrats now get the lion's share of military contractors' donations. And as
right,
well they should, because their guy's, you know, kind of in charge,
right?
Right?
That's what he was saying. He goes, you know, it all changes with the wind. You know, whoever's in control, that's who's going to be doing it. And I was going to ask that, you know, I was going to ask about Lockheed Martin and Halliburton and, you know, and all these, you know, and what the really, really big boys and what's been going on. And, of course, it's just absurd, you know, and it all goes down to what we're talking about. I'm just concerned about any ideological, anything that interferes with our ability to vote, no matter whether I agree with them or not, it's just, I no way. That just doesn't work. Hey, listen, I'll be right back. I have to call one of my workers, and I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, we will count the moments, Bobby. And actually, while we're doing that, I wanted to give a shout-out to Marianne Richards-Castilla and Tamara, who are both in the chat room. Some people prefer the chats, and you know, but if you ladies would love to call in, boy, it would be nice to get a female perspective every once in a while. We unfortunately don't get that here very often unless Janine calls in, sometimes maybe even Debbie Lynn. But if you guys want to call in, it's 646-929-2495. We'd love to hear from you. So, so Greg, but here's the nit I want to pick with you, my friend. And that is this. You know, when you do engage in that discussion, and I'm absolutely not saying, I'm not putting a judgment on it, as a matter of fact, I'd probably go as far to say as you're right most of the time. When you talk about the money coming from the left is not in proportion to the money coming from the right, and it's coming from sources that are probably a bit more, I don't know, needy, let's say it that way, than the money that's coming from the right. I you know what, I don't even care to argue with that with you because you're probably right. But the fact is that every time we get into this, well, Coke, well, Soros, well, you know, this big corporation contributing to the left and this one to the right, every time we get into that, the conversation just so quickly devolves to that place where we can't talk to one another anymore. And once that happens, then we lose that ability or even the desire to unite, which is what we all need to do. I guess they say advertising got to tell somebody over and over and over again. So I'll just keep saying it. This is not a war against blue. This is not a war against red. This is a war against green. And if blue and red don't get together and war against green, it's not going to happen. We're not going to get anywhere.
I will agree with that to a certain extent, I guess, but not all the way, because there are fundamental underlying principles that guide the thinking of individuals in the parties and outside the parties that ultimately lead to decisions, that lead to policy, that lead to legislation, that then will have a real profound influence and impact in our lives and in the lives of the people on the planet. And so to pretend, Dan, that the two sides are the same, other than the fact that they all want to have more money to spend to convince us to vote for them, That's where, in my mind, a lot of the similarity ends.
I totally agree with you. So here's my conclusion, and that is, whereas we used to favor the party whose policies were most in line with our what we wanted to see America become, right? What we're now doing is we're siding with the parties that have the donors who are now in line with what we most in line with what we want, right? So we're not picking between Republicans and Democrats anymore. We're picking between Soros and Coke, and that probably is a much easier answer. But here's my problem.
I Yeah, go ahead.
Here's my problem with that. Do you really trust the big donors on the left to actually pursue policy that is good for the people? And I'm not talking about things like unions, because that's obvious. Obviously, unions, you know, putting some teeth back into the unions would be a good thing. I'm not going to argue with that. But I'm talking about the mega millionaires, the individuals. Do you think George Soros cares about you and your family?
If you're making this a binary choice, then the answer is I will trust the liberal progressive donor like a George Soros way more than I will ever trust any of the Koch brothers. And it's a simple reason, the simple rationale. Everything I know about those two sources of money tells me that the Koch brothers don't give a you-know-what about anything else but making another buck at my expense. Whereas at least what I believe is that the liberal donor, the liberal wealthy donor, this guy, I can't remember his name now, it's like Effley or something like that now, who's going to spend a couple of $100 million to make climate change an issue, I benefit from that. The whole planet benefits from that. And until the laws get changed and the big money comes out, I'm going to support that idea. He's fighting the battle with the way the battle lines have been drawn and with the weapons that have been distributed. To do anything else would be foolish. In fact, I criticize the left all the time for not fighting this fight the way the conservatives fight it. There's a reason why, Dan, if you look at one of the posts or one of the links that I put up on your Facebook posting today about independent spending totals in 2012, there's a reason why the red outspent the blue something like 20 to 1. You know why? Because they're willing to do it. The blues never do. The blues don't. They have too much principle, I guess, to spend that kind of money, or they just don't want to, or they don't have it. I don't know what the reason is, but if I got to pick between Soros and Koch, that's easy. That's a no-brainer. That's an absolute layup. Give me a hard question.
No, you answered the question exactly. You answered it. So why don't we just, you know,
however,
let's skip the middle.
However,
why don't we cut out the middlemen and just elect those guys?
Well, because first of all, they're not running. Right, they're not running for office. They aren't running for office. They're too smart for that. You know, all those guys, the Kochs are too smart for that. Sheldon Adelson's too smart for that. They know that the way to continue to keep their beds feathered is to have the puppets in place that'll do their bidding. That's why you had nothing but Wall Street executives running the Treasury and the Federal Reserve for the last, I don't know, what has it been, like 50 years? It makes sense for those guys to go through that revolving door. There's a more than one revolving door in D.C. You know, one of them opens up on K Street. The other one opens up on Wall Street. You don't see any liberals going through that revolving door, at least I don't think you do, between Wall Street and D.C. Do you? I mean, maybe I missed it, but I don't see it.
No. All right, I'll say no. I'll go out there and say no.
I could be wrong, and I'd be glad to be proven wrong. And somebody, I'm sure, can cite some example in which I might be
actually
wrong.
No, I can't prove you wrong, and I just remembered why. Right. So a couple of weeks ago, I played a clip of Nancy Pelosi on Jon Stewart's show. And at the end of one of the segments, you know, before he cut to commercial, and he said, "Will you stick around? I want to go to it." He said he had called her out, and he said, "Oh, you have people that do that. You have people you have people that have gone to work for private industry, right? From your." And she's like, "Who? Really? I don't know." And of course, the next day, and I think it was truthout.org, she's had 28 staffers go to work for private industry. Specifically in the industries where her committee held sway. 28.
Yeah, I get it. I don't deny that or disagree with that, and I want to fix that, Dan. You know that. I'm all for getting the money out of politics. You know that. But until that day comes, and I'm going to continue to fight that fight, until that day comes, my principles, my ethics, and my values align far more with the liberal and the progressive agendas that are out there wherever they might be. They certainly don't exist in the White House these days, let me tell you that. You know, anybody who thinks that the president is a progressive isn't paying enough attention to what he's doing and what he's not doing. Until that day comes when we are funding campaigns through small donations and not big ones, I'm gonna have to dance with who brung me, at least, you know, when it comes to things like policy and law.
So now let me ask you the question that's begged from your argument. And first of all, I'm in full agreement. I'm with you. I line up on the left these days for sure. I don't want to. I'd rather line up in the middle. But the right has made it for the last 35 years. So, well, actually, see, that's the argument. See, and I keep going back to that. And I stop myself. I go, no. It's been bipartisan. So let me ask you this question, Greg. If the Democrats are the party of yore, you talk about the Democratic Party of yore, right? They fight for the little guy, right? Where is the Democratic scream at the top of their lungs for campaign finance reform?
Excellent question. I wish I had an answer for you.
Surely it would be in their benefit, right? If they really are the party of the little guy. Except when you go to Open Secrets, you see that they're the party that are being funded just as much as the other guys by huge corporations. Now, the private individuals, and here's another thing. Private individuals.
Not as much, but go ahead.
Private individuals don't have anything to lose by being political and being out there. Corporations are the ones who use the dark money channels and find ways to bury their influence. And when asked, because I've been involved I think it's Demos, who has, they've been going around and doing protests at shareholder meetings trying to get shareholders to demand that their corporations disclose who is donating money or who they're donating money to, which of course they don't have to, right? So you know, and their corporations are going, you know, we're not telling you. I mean, they're basically just telling their shareholders, we're not telling you.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So you know, that's kind of so we know where the Kochs and the Soros of the world line up. I referred you to that page on Open Secrets because it's the known money, right? It's the reported money. Obviously Open Secrets can only know what Open Secrets knows, right, what's disclosed. So they're reporting on the disclosed direct campaign funding to contributions. They have guesstimates out there on soft money, but they'll tell you these are just guesses. But in that you see the huge amounts of money being given to and which parties are getting it. And then you see also the aggregators like our friend Act Blue, who are at the very top of that list by over 33% margin at just shy of $100 million. And yes, I understand it's dwarfed by the soft money. But in what we know, there's a lot of corporations giving a lot of money to a lot of blue people or aggregating for blue.
Okay.
So I don't deny
any of that. Yep.
Well, so I don't know. I don't know. It, somehow to me it's a little depressing to think that I've got to bet on the funders.
There's no doubt, Dan. There's no doubt there's a hypocrisy at work here. There's no question about that. But the problem is at this point is that, as you pointed out, there's not enough courage in Washington, D.C. by anyone or anyone in significant numbers to stand up and make this the issue. And it's because it's not in their interest to do that. There's no getting around the reality that until they – it's a real chicken and egg scenario, right? Until the law gets changed, the politician, whether they're the incumbent or the challenger, has to play by the rules that have been established and the dynamics and the reality that exists, and that is that it's going to be almost impossible to get elected to office if you don't have lots of money. And there's not a lot of people who have lots of money. So you don't have a lot of choices, right? You have to go after those big donors who are then going to want something in return. The corruption is built into the system. And until that system gets changed, it's going to be hard to imagine how anybody, you know, not Henry Fonda. There's no Mr. Smith going to Washington here. You know, that's... what was his name? Jimmy Stewart, right. Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, there's no Jimmy Stewart out there, okay? There might be. There might be a whole bunch of Jimmy Stewarts, but they're not going to get elected. And the reason they're not going to get elected is because politicians have to live in the reality in which they spend, you know, anywhere from, some people claim it's 40 to others, 70% of their time raising money so that they can keep the seat that they've got. And the reason that they have to do that is because campaigns have to be financed by money, and because the Supreme Court allows it to now be financed by essentially as much money as possible. Take and change that dynamic, and you can change the way, you can change the kind of person who's motivated to run for office. You change the way they actually do campaign for office. You change what motivates them once they are elected into office. And I'm not defending the politicians, and I'm not suggesting that this is the best that we can do. It's simply the system that exists today.
So. You said something very interesting, and I you actually said two things I found very interesting. No, but there's two things that you said. They're probably about 10 minutes apart, but I was like, wait a second. I started looking at their juxtaposition.
You fell asleep in between.
I'm sorry?
I said you fell asleep in between.
That was it. I just dreamed it. Okay. No, seriously. You posted a link somewhere that talked about the fact that red outspent blue 20-1 in the soft money categories. Am I representing that accurately?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That was in 2012?
Yes, that was election 2012. Yeah.
All races or just the presidential race?
Presidential campaign.
Okay. What happened?
Yeah, red lost. Red lost.
So doesn't that kind of blow up the theory that money wins? Or is it that after a certain amount, there's saturation in the market and there's a very small incremental, if any, gain after you spent your first $100 million?
You know, I know you posited that before, and I've thought about that before. And... you know, I don't think it's such a crazy idea that at some point, you know, the next $10 million that you spend really isn't going to move a needle anywhere. But I won't pretend or profess to know, you know, if there's been any kind of studies done or if that's a, you know, that's a claim that anybody has, you know, followed up on or, you know, that kind of. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. But it seems like there's some rationale to that. People like us who understand marketing understand that you don't just continue to spend money once you've attained some amount of market share. The next dollar you spend isn't worth a dollar anymore. It might even be worth less. That's a great question. I just don't know if there's an easy answer to it.
Okay. That's fair enough. Okay. Yeah. I
know it sounds like a wishy-washy answer, and I'm kind of like,
no,
you know.
No, not really. It's logical. It makes sense, but I wonder if as long as I'm positing things that I have absolutely no clue about. Let me go one further. what if the game is really rigged by marketers who sit there and whisper in the ears of their clients, hey, no, you got to spend this money. What if it turns out that you know, sometimes people say that, you know, lawyers who are not necessarily above board in divorces will keep pushing their clients to get more, because that then they'll get more, right? You know, same thing with like personal injury law. You know, the higher the settlement, the more I get. So I'm going to keep pushing my client, regardless of whether it's in his or her best interest, because that's what I'm just going to get the most. I wonder if there's people on the inside that have rigged the game against the greedy politicians to get them to spend more.
Wow, you're like Ian Fleming territory here now, man.
I don't know.
On an island plotting to take over the world.
I don't think it's a stretch to say that to make the comparison to lawyers, and I think there are I have to believe, I'm not speaking totally out of turn, that there are ambulance chasers that will work that way. So why wouldn't other people?
Okay, so you know what's funny? It's funny you're going down this path, because one of the articles that I shared with your readers on your Facebook posting was a ProPublica article about this guy Sean Noble, who went to work after being a Republican aide in Arizona for the Koch brothers. And this guy made millions and millions of dollars by being in charge of handing out the hundreds of millions of dollars that the Koch brothers were distributing throughout the last presidential campaign. So he had a lot to gain by convincing people with money that they had to spend more and more of it. So I can see the ambulance chaser angle to this in what you're saying. It sounds like that's what you're saying, is that there's an ambulance chaser angle for all this too. But here's the other thing. Sheldon Adelson, I don't think, got to be as rich as he is by squandering, or at least thinking that he was squandering, $93 million. He expected to get a return on that investment. No matter what it was, he had calculated it out what it ought to be in some reasonable amount of time. That's why Karl Rove is on the ropes, right? Because Karl did not deliver. He had all this money being funneled his way, and he didn't deliver.
But isn't Adelson older than dirt?
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, you gotta.
I mean, isn't it possible that he's just after a legacy, or maybe he goes, "Hey, here's something I've never done. I never bought a government. I've done everything else. Why not make that my last hurrah?"
I'm not sure how old the Koch brothers are, but I don't think they have co-eds chasing them around at spring break. I mean, those guys are like in their 80s too, I think.
Oh, okay. So Marianne's in the chat room, and she wants to know who Norman Adelson is. He's the the guy who owns all the casinos, right? He's the casino magnet?
I'm not sure how much of Las Vegas he owns, but he owns a lot of it.
Yeah. I wonder if he went up and as Steve Wynn crashed, he just bought all the Wynn stuff. I don't know. Or maybe the two of them go head-to-head. Yeah, but he's a but that's who he is, Marianne. He's
Sheldon
a very
Adelson
rich.
Sheldon Adelson is number 8 in the Forbes billionaire rankers.
Nicely done. Who ranks above Bobby's back. Bobby, I'm gonna open your mic up here. Hopefully
don't let him into this conversation.
Don't what?
Okay, I said don't let him into this conversation.
No, okay, forget it. We won't. But yeah, so just out of curiosity, so who's above him?
Let's see, who's above Sheldon? Hold on a second, I lost the link. This is that dead air that you never won on a radio show. According to Forbes, Bill Gates number 1 at $76 billion. Number 2 is Carlos Slim, the telecom magnate from Mexico.
Yep.
Then there's somebody named, I don't know who this is, Amancio Ortega. He's from Spain. And then Warren, the Oracle of Omaha, Buffett is number 4. Larry, the big, almost said a bad word, Ellison from Oracle.
He's not a beloved character.
He is not a beloved character.
He does love himself, but he got there by not being nice.
Yeah, he's $48 billion worth of nasty. And then guess who comes in 6th, tied, as if they were twins?
Bobby Rodrigo.
Yeah, Dan Aronson. No.
Yeah, that's
Charles
it. You found me
Charles
out.
Charles and David. Charles and David Koch come in tied number six. Sheldon Adelson.
Wait a second.
Comes in right behind.
so they are. They're conjoined twins. Is that what we don't know about them?
Yes, that's right. They're like 8 years apart, but they're conjoined. I'm not sure.
See, no. Tell me somebody's not trying to paint a picture of evilness there.
It's not hard.
I understand that, but why do you have to play a trick like that? Unless maybe they're legally married. Wouldn't that be funny? Maybe they're legally – maybe they have a civil union and they share their have joint bank accounts.
I don't – yeah. Well, they're both –
how hilarious would that be?
This is the thing, though. I mean, isn't this the thing that has to be asked in the 21st century when we have seen so much of the wealth and prosperity going to so few? How is it? And why is it that somebody who has a net worth of $40 billion and his brother who has the same amount feels compelled to want to try and rig our government to somehow tilt it even more in their favor? Have they not won the game yet? Do they not feel like this is a, you know what? He's 78 years old. Brother, how much more money can you make with the time you got left? There's a psychosis at work there, Dan. There has to be.
Oh, there's no doubt. But I think that's – how many guys have you ever known in their lives have stood up and said, you know what, I get enough. I'm good.
None. I've never known that.
Yeah. I guess maybe you and I will never know what that's like, right?
Chances of having enough is pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, like a normal human being, just pocket a billion, put that in. This is what I'm going to live off of for the rest of my life, $1 billion. And there's things that like calculate that stuff out, like how long it would take you, how much you'd have to spend every single day to spend $1 billion.
This guy doesn't have enough years left. He doesn't have enough years. If he spent $1 billion a year, he'd have to live to be 112 years old. It's not going to work out for him.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. And I don't know how you would possibly spend $1 billion a year. I don't know what you'd do.
Back to your question, back to the question of the show, is how is it that the Supreme Court of the United States doesn't see all this? How is it possible? It can only be possible, I think, in one of a couple ways. And you should bring Bobby into the conversation. It's not fair to be frank.
No, it's good. It's good, but you know what? Hold on to that thought, because I'll bring Bobby in. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna put you on mute here for a second and do the little radio promo. Forgive me, my brother. But before I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna read this as kind of a teaser. The argument in Citizens United, the crux of the issue is this, and there is no compelling state interest in to justify the restriction on core political speech in this case. And I just had it, darn it. You know what? Well, I'll find it when I come back. But, I mean, it was talking about there's no quid pro quo going on. There is no tit for tat. There's none of that kind of whatever metaphor you want to use. And that's, Greg, I think you posed the question of the hour, which is how is that possible? But we'll come back in the second hour. We'll talk about that with Greg and Bobby and anybody else that wants to call in at 646-929-2495. I promise we won't bite. I'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, let's learn about all of the other Coffee Party radio shows.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy, heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership, saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
Yes, the mellifluous tones of, boy, Little Anthony and the Imperials? I can't believe I'm not going to remember who sung Stay. That is terrible. I have a second thing to look up. Anyhow, let's bring Bobby and Greg back into the conversation. Gentlemen, your mics are hot. Citizens United is a modest nonprofit corporation whose expenditures in producing and promoting the movie were all completely independent of any campaign. Such independent expenditures do not involve any actual or apparent quid pro quo arrangements. And as the court said in Buckley, the absence of prearrangement and coordination of expenditure with the candidate or his agent not only undermines the value of the expenditure to the candidate, but also alleviates the danger that expenditures will be given as quid pro quo for improper commitments from the candidate, right? So that's the infamous my super pad, my candidate, nobody from the candidate's group, right? Nobody from his posse can get with the PAC's posse and coordinate the messaging, which we saw people get caught in the last election cycle, and which, I mean, how hard would that be to do?
First of all, the Citizens United case, in general, the issue that was decided so badly for us as individuals wasn't even before the court in the first place. The court sent the case back down and formulated that question to be argued and added it to the case. It was absurd. So as far as the discussion about whether or not the SCOTUS has been co-opted, absolutely they have. And if you look at the amount of the way they swing when it comes to business is before them. And I've talked about this before, the majority of the decisions that are done by the court when it comes to issues, matters of commerce and business, are unanimous, and they're on the side of business 90% or more of the time, and happened for quite some time, certainly during the Robert Court. But I got to tell you guys, I was screaming at you. I couldn't get in, and when I came back, because I was flabbergasted that the two of you actually are trying to tell me that there is a difference between the Democrats and Republicans when it comes to ideology and the way that they use their money, because you could not be more wrong in my view. And I can give you a laundry list, and I'm going to.
Hold on. Before you do that, let me clarify what Greg and I was saying. And Greg, you know, can please jump down my throat if I'm wrong. But what I was suggesting was that we are no longer choosing the candidates we back. We're choosing the funders who are driving the candidates
and
their decisions. Hold on, Bobby. Let me finish. We got an hour, bro. Relax. Okay. What Greg said is if this is a binary choice, I will trust the guys on the left more than I'll trust the guys on the right. He didn't say that he trusts them and he knows that they're going to do the right thing. He said, if I had to choose, that's what I'm going to do. Go ahead.
And I got that. I got it the first time. Okay. What I'm saying is that to me, you can't do that situation, in my view. And here's why I mean that. Okay. George Soros. We'll just throw Soros out there. Soros against the Koch. They both support the Patriot Act. They both support NSA. They're on record for it. Okay? If you look at, it was Bill Clinton, who was a George Soros boy, who signed the repeal of Glass-Steagall. Okay? It is Barack Obama who is waging war all over the world and using black ops to do it, and the military budget, as far as the contracting for waste, is as bad as it's ever been, and he's as good at it as anybody. He is and he is funded by these guys, and they agree with it. The Patriot Act was voted 98-1, and the Iraq War was supported by just as many funded by Soros Democrats as it was by Koch funded people. If you look at the voting records and the people and who are funding these people, they are both doing it to us without question. Now, if you want to talk about climate change, great. We all know I stand on that. But look at the way they're voting on the GMO or the Monsanto issue. Even if you don't like the labeling issue, let's say, let's talk about Monsanto co-opting our food supply. And as Henry Kissinger said, if you want to control the world, control the food. They are all supporting this stuff, both sides of the aisle. There is no difference. Because if there was, there would be a noticeable fight at the high level of funding, which we don't see. We don't see it. Because when you talk about Democrats not saying anything, putting them aside, if you just talk about the funders, they are not having a fundamental battle with their money against each other because they're on the same side.
Greg Rusick, rebuttal.
There isn't very much that Bobby is saying that I would actually refute. There's simply a limited amount of choice, and while we work to change the system by which our politicians campaign and get elected, I have to make a choice. I'm not going to not vote. And you know, I have voted for independent candidates in the past, and I don't consider it a throwaway of my vote. So I'm not gonna refute anything that Bobby is saying in principle. But what I will say is that as bad as the current administration it is, I shudder to think what would have happened if John McCain and Sarah Palin had been elected to office, or even Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan for that matter. There is not an equal amount of concern for me when it comes to comparing individuals and parties. They're both bad, but they're not equally bad on every issue. They're just not.
Let me weigh in very quickly by saying this, Bobby. I feel you, and you kind of, there's a couple things that you kind of your little impassioned speech there brought back to me. One of them was the amount of head scratching I did. I only watched the first presidential election. I couldn't take a debate. I'm sorry, I couldn't even take it after that. But what I really walked away with from that first presidential debate, I'm sure it happened in the second and the third, was how many times one person would be asked a question, he would give his answer, and the other guy would say, you know, we basically agree on this.
Thank you.
I mean, how many times did that happen during those presidential debates? It was like almost, I would almost venture to say it was not close to a majority of the questions answered where the other guy's rebuttal was, we kind of agree.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you something else, and I've said this before. We hear all of this fodder from the right about the Affordable Care Act. And one of the things that I noticed as much as anything during the actual election and the debates was the silence of the Affordable Care Act issue. It was non-existent. If you go back and you look at it, compared to how it was the year before and compared to how it was the year after, during the election, it was quiet as a mouse because it's a marriage between the government and the insurance companies. Whether you like it or not, that is what it is. The government did not take control of our insurance industry. They married it. They made us use them. That, now, whether it's right or wrong, it's not the point. The point is that they are in bed together more than you believe. I get the fact that Paul Ryan is against marriage equality. I get the fact that that they probably would be running around trying to stamp out abortion any way they can. I get all that. My, you know, I believe that. Be that as it may, when it comes down to the money and the corruption that is in our government and the things that it's being spent on and the way that they are removing our rights in society, they are exactly the same. There is no difference. If you can have a president sign, a constitutional lawyer by profession, and somebody who railed against George Bush on these specific issues, if you can have him sign into law an indefinite detention provision on American citizens and American soil, it says it all right there. And they all went right along with it except for the five guys in Oregon, Bernie Sanders, and a few other people on the House and the Senate. Everybody went along with it no matter whose side it is on, and they still do today. If you argue about the indefinite detention provision in the New York Democratic base, which is the richest and strongest Democratic base in this country, even more than California when it comes to money, they look at you like you got five heads on while you're fighting this because, of course, 9/11 happened there, and they don't believe that it would ever be used against anybody but a Muslim, which is absurd in its statement by itself. They're doing exactly the same thing to us because they can, because they're buying it. Maybe there's a few issues that they're different on. I get it. But the majority of them, Soros is exactly the same as the Koch brothers and all these other guys.
Yeah, and someday you'll get passionate about that.
Yeah. I will say that fundamentally there's a lot of similarity, but no, it's not nearly the same thing.
So maybe guys, you know what? Maybe we're looking at this on the wrong axis. I just had another epiphany. I love listening to you guys go on because I get a chance to actually think about stuff, which of course you can't do when you're talking, right? So here's an epiphany. Maybe we're arguing the wrong axis. Now, what do I mean by that? Real simple. There's the standard single dimensional left v right, single plane graph, right, that most people use. But we in the Coffee Party love to push the transpartisan matrix. And that's giving us a second dimension, right? So if you close your eyes and picture it, to the left is your liberal and to the right is your conservative. But now you have this up and down. Now up on the top you have authority, and on the bottom you have freedom, right? So you talk about different ways to get to the same goal. Right, and what I always use the when you look at social issues, libertarians are actually farther to the left than progressives because they're the ultimate live and let live. Hey, it's none of your business, government. Government, just stay out of it. Stay out of my bedroom. Stay out of my womb. Stay out of my just stay out. Right. So they want to achieve that kind of liberalism socially through freedom, whereas the Democrats want a strong central government to push those mandates down, right? And I remember specifically during the gun control, Greg, if it wasn't you, remind me, but I remember arguing with somebody about the fact that they said, well, I should know when I go from one state to another that the gun laws are the same. We should have a uniform code for gun laws, and it should be, of course, hard to get guns. And so Democrats tend to be for very strong government pushing their liberal agendas. Now, when you flip to the other side and you look at the fiscal issues, the libertarians – match up and are even farther to the right than the Tea Party guys. They don't believe, government should be minimalistic. It should be, right? It's the throw it out with the bathwater, that kind of thing. Shut down half the government. We don't need it. It's interfering. We don't need all the Rand Paul craziness. Sorry to Rand Paul fans. some of it sounds a little nuts to me. I fly a lot. When he talks about disbanding the FAA, it bothers me. I like my planes in the air, not crashing into each other. I'm sorry. So I like the FAA. But anyway, but when you look at it, and then the Tea Partiers and the Republicans, but again, it's that same thing. The Tea Party is all about pushing their agenda down people's throats through a strong centralized government. Maybe a smaller centralized government, but still a very strong and authoritarian federal government. And again, The libertarians are more like the, we don't need government because we don't need to run people's lives, and that's what too much of government is anyway, so we'll just get rid of that part. So freedom versus authority. Maybe that's really what we should be talking about, is not left v. right when we talk about Democrats versus conservatives. Maybe we should be talking about the fact that the similarity is that authoritarian, strong, centralized government pushing whosoever agenda is in power. Your thoughts,
exactly the argument. It's exactly the liberty argument, and I don't call it the libertarian argument because it's a party. I call it the liberty argument, which is completely independent of all parties, and that is a very good assessment. It is about that, because when you say, I would defy anybody, Greg included, to give me a list of things that these guys are doing that are different, because it doesn't exist. If you go and look at what they're doing and the laws they're supporting and the subsidies that they're doing and the way the corporations are running the show, it's absolutely ludicrous, and we're sitting here taking it. And, of course, if we don't do something about it, we might as well just lay down and get the remote and order our groceries over the Internet and not leave the house at this point. But you have a liberty is where it's at when it comes to most of this, absolutely. There's no question what you said is 100% accurate with the movement. They don't want anybody, they don't want the government to tell you, they don't want the government in the marriage business at all, like I've said many times. The government does not need to be in the marriage business, and it was originally created to stop interracial marriage, as we all know. And of course, now they're using it to the umpteenth degree. I also, though, don't agree with the fact that businesses should be allowed to run and not have to serve everybody in their community. Because we lived through that, and this trick that Arizona was trying to do, there's an argument inside the libertarian or liberty movement about it, and it infuriates me because ideally you have to be responsible to the community as well. You know, everybody's got to be part of it. I'm not exactly I'm with you, Dan, on the government thing. As you heard me say many times, it's all about the value for your dollar. I don't care how big it is, and I agree with you. The FAA does not need, and Rand Paul's not part of the Liberty Movement. He's completely co-opted. Even his mother said that. He's completely co-opted. He hangs out in the morning with the Liberty guys, and in the afternoon with Grover Norquist. So my nickname for Rand Paul is Trick Liberty, and I don't care if there are Rand Paul supporters like that, because we've talked to him in person. We know exactly where he stands. And we know exactly how he's co-opted. So whatever.
Well, you don't have to care, Bobby. You're not the host. I have to care a little about. But hey, if there are any Rand Paul supporters who were just insulted by Bobby Rodrigo, the number is 646-929-2495. Please feel free to come on in and take them over your knee.
I love it.
sorry, but you're on a roll. My bad.
No, it's just amazing. It's, you know, I give you another example of how this is working from the funder standpoint. You hear me talk about how many times the hemp issue. If you go and look at the states that ban it, the people who vote against it is complete, and the people who fund against it. Where's George Soros? He is funding against it. He is not funding for it. And the fact that we don't grow hemp is hurting our economy in such a degree, it's absurd. If you have a plant that can do 25,000 things, and we're in a manufacturing crunch and a farming crunch, and it doesn't need pesticides, it's organic, it does everything in the world, it can build, it can do all these things, and it can also hurt the big oil industries and coal and all of that. Why isn't it being supported by the funders from the left, per se, if we go with Greg's argument? Or why isn't it being funded from the right, if we go with the conservative argument? Because they're full of crap. The funders are backing themselves and their money and the corporations that make the money. They don't care about us. They don't care about any ideology.
Ultimately, well, hold on. So hold on a second. Let's take that to the next level then. So is it? I mean, as long as I've been posturing like good conspiracy theories the whole night, so why not keep going on that tack? Is it that the big companies, is it the Monsantos of the world and the ConAgras of the world haven't figured out yet quite how to mass grow it, and that the production people haven't figured out how to mass make it yet? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Put it into manufacturing of all these things. Are they stalling so that they can get that plan together, and then all of a sudden we'll see everybody coming out for it? When only the rich guys will be able to profit off of it?
It is possible that I've thought about that, actually. It is possible that they're doing that. The problem is, it doesn't really give you a different – what you're saying could be absolutely true regardless of the history. You know, the history is what the history is. I mean, hemp has basically been taken out of our society since the beginning of the 1900s on the basis of other – you know, DuPont was right at the forefront of getting them out of the business as fast as possible. And they didn't get it done all the way until the drug war started, because, of course, there was some ridiculous idea that you could hide the marijuana inside the hemp and get away. It's the whole thing. I can't even say with a straight face the absurdity of the hemp being stopped because of the drug war, because it has nothing to do with it. And it actually eliminates it actually sterilizes marijuana if it's in the same field with it. The whole thing is so absurd. But it has to be, even if your scenario is possible, the hemp was removed from society because of what it does against industry. I mean, you're looking at countries that are making cars out of it. Henry Ford made cars out of it. They've known this forever. Same thing.
Well, so who is anybody pro-hemp that's in the government right now today?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, there are 10 states now that are allowed to research grow it. And then, of course, Washington State nullified nullification, not the exact way. That's the easy way of saying it. But they basically said to the federal government, kiss my booty, and we're going to grow hemp. And, of course, you know, they've already done that with marijuana, and Colorado's doing the same thing. Kentucky is getting ready to start growing it. North Carolina has been involved in the research of it. Notice the states I'm saying that have been involved in the research of it for a long time. And, of course, the medical marijuana field, we all know anybody who has any kind of research into medical marijuana knows how good it is for your body. Right. And
wait, are we talking about empirical research, Greg?
there was quite a bit of data gathered.
Because I will cop to have done that. I will have cop to have done that.
A lot of data gathering, a lot of first-hand research. Yes.
I'd like to see your notes
on
that, Professor.
I have inhaled. So.
I think it was Obama. I think was that Obama's quote? Of course I inhaled. That was the whole point. I want to say that was Obama, but I don't know. But it was clever, whoever said it.
And I know Clinton said that he smoked it and didn't inhale, you know, and all that stuff. Anyway, so, but the people who keep marijuana out of the thing are the same people that keep alternative medicine out of the thing, Big Pharma. You know, all of these rich guys, right, left or otherwise, got money with them all. And if you don't see somebody or a group, even if it's just a caucus inside of a party, don't see these people. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, with all her posturing about big government, voted for Monsanto. It was, I'm like, my God, what are you doing? And she campaigned on it.
Are you still driving, Bobby? I'm getting worried that you're getting too upset to be driving.
Yeah, he's gonna be doing like 85 by now, 90 miles an hour.
He's gonna be running
I'm
his car into a bridge abutment. He's just gonna go. You know what? It's not worth living. Boom. we're gonna hear it.
Stay away from the median. So here's part of the reason why I say, and I continue to say, and I will continue to say until the evidence proves otherwise, that there's a lot of similarities, but they're the two sides that we are left to choose from today are not the same. And these are very simple questions that you can ask yourself, to at least that I think so, and make decisions about. If I've got to pick between two bowls of crap, which one do I pick? So tell me, and you don't have to answer these questions because everybody knows the answer to these questions. You know, which party was it that squandered a federal surplus? Which party was it that took us to war in Iraq based on lies? Which party is it that continues to feed us a lie? Hold on, now that's not true and you know it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Absolutely 100% it is.
No.
He's
going
to point to the, congressional vote, which was only the one guy from Minnesota abstained, Greg.
I'm not talking about that part of it. I'm talking about who set up the lies to begin with.
Doesn't matter.
It sure does. The defense that everybody in that Congress has for why they voted the way they did was because of the intelligence that they were provided.
The way
that they voted.
Bobby, let Greg speak. And before you do, let me ask him a question. Greg, how many of those people were on the intelligence committee?
I don't know.
I will tell you, committees are split, and then there's one extra, right? So for whoever's in the majority gets the majority on the committee, that's how it works. And other than that, they're split straight down the middle. So if there were 31 people serving on the intelligence committee, then 15 Democrats had access to that intelligence. Same as the President of the United States.
Intelligence, right. And who gathered that intelligence?
Fine. Hey, it's conspiracy theory night. We can go with that.
That's right. I got my tinfoil hat on good and tight.
We didn't find WMDs. There's no doubt.
There's
a lot of explanations other than they weren't there that are plausible.
Read the 9/11 report.
I said they're plausible. I didn't say they're factual. Anybody can conclude what they want, and you could decide whether there was a second shooter in Dallas, too. But nobody's going to know, ever. For sure, nobody's going to know.
Right. I'm going to continue with my list.
All right, continue.
Which party is it that wants to change the Constitution to define marriage as between a man and a woman? Which party is it that pretends that climate science and climate change is a conspiracy? Which party is it that refuses to acknowledge that there are limitations to how big this empire might need to be? And I get it. They both do it. They both spend money. They're both looking for pork. But there are some very fundamental issues to our society.
Please, you got to tell me what they are. You have to tell me what the differences are in the two parties when it comes to the empire.
Let me help filter Bobby's question. Right, you've laid out a lot of good. Accurate positions of people of why they don't want to do something, right? What I'm looking for is what do you want to do?
Tell me
about the things that have been brought to the floor and have been defeated by Mr. Obstructionist Government. Yeah, I'd rather hear
about,
the do's than the don'ts.
How about food stamps and a continuation of long-term unemployment? Can we start there?
Sure.
How about the president signed it? Okay.
Signed
how
what?
About if you look at the vote of it, you see Democrats on that. Our president is a Democrat and he signed it. Period. If he doesn't, if he's going to be principled like you say, and there's a difference. He don't sign it. He doesn't use the veto pen. Can you please tell me something he vetoed? Did he veto the insider trading provision that they voted for unanimously? Our principled Democrats and our principled Republicans who passed it unanimously in minus 30 seconds that they don't have to show their insider trading transparency anymore?
That wasn't on my list, but I don't disagree with you on that either.
Okay,
right.
That wasn't one of the things
on my list, Bobby, but I don't disagree with you on that.
Let's talk about briefly the war in Iraq. The reason that anybody voted for that war in Iraq, it was because if they didn't, they weren't going to get reelected, period. All of them who voted for that were not going to get reelected because our media was shoving it down our throat. and they were going for the, you know, look at the authorization to use military force when that was passed. Look at the votes on that and how many Democrats did that. Don't tell me that, and that had nothing to do with any intelligence that was coming from them about Iraq. That was just about, here, George, go do whatever you want, the same way they did for Nixon back in 73. The FISA court was created under Carter. There is not, when it comes to this money stuff and when it comes to the control, they are equally doing it. And I mentioned marriage equality earlier, and I mentioned the abortion issue earlier. Yes, there has been a few people to bring to the table that they want to define it as a marriage between a man and a woman. Same thing that every year there is legislation been brought to expand the presidential terms to more than two terms. Right now there's one in committee, for example, and that's by a Democrat. They are playing us, and our media is running right along with it, and they're making us believe that there is such a difference that we can argue like we are about it instead of paying attention to what is really going on, in my view, and fixing it. I think that.
All right, Bobby. Now, don't make me mute you. We're gonna have to let Greg finish uninterrupted.
That's okay, man. I love the passion. I love the passion. I finally met somebody who's at least, if maybe not, more passionate than I. I still submit to you that there are a number of issues that will continue to persuade me that there is not a Republican worthy of my vote. Not one. And most of it has to do with their position as a party on issues that are important to me. And those are issues like voter suppression. There's only one party that I'm aware of, and maybe, Bobby, you can correct me on this, that there's only one party that took immediate advantage of the evisceration of the Voting Rights Act in order to suppress voters in America. There's only one. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
You are wrong.
Okay, tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me where the Democrats are suppressing
votes. The Democratic Party initiated gerrymandering laws in this country just like the Republican Party did.
You're taking liberties, Bobby. I think you're taking liberties with my point. Liberties with my point.
Are you talking about voter suppression, Greg, like having to have an ID, that kind of voter suppression?
Exactly right.
Absolutely. But there's a laundry list of Republicans that don't support that from the liberty side. Totally.
And I'm not saying they all do. I'm not saying there's 100%.
And I don't want you to vote Republican.
Well, you don't have any worries there. it's not likely to happen again in my lifetime. Unless there's a dramatic change in the extremist ideology that exists in the Republican Party today, I will tell you with complete honesty, the reason I'm registered as non-affiliated is because I want to vote for the candidate. I want to, but it's hard for me to come to a conclusion, even at a local or state level, if an individual has decided that from a political, from a policy, from an ideological standpoint, they want to associate themselves with a party that is, in so many ways, it just seems to me unscientific, uncaring, disconnected from really the vast majority of people in this country. I don't think there's going to be any way that they're going to win over a voter like me when instead of really trying to provide people with a helping hand, they're continuing to help the people who need the least amount of help.
There are some of those. Alberto did a show a couple Saturdays ago around a guy, I forget his name at the time, so shoot me, but I'll have it before the end of this show. But a very rich right-wing think tank guy who said, you know what, we need to give on the social safety net. We need to let people know it'll always be there, and then everybody can relax, and we can get on with the business of building the economy. So there are some now. Unfortunately, that's again, you know, that's a funder think tank guy. That's unfortunately not a guy who's running. But how did we get
on the value of the Republican Party? I wasn't saying anything about the value of the Republican Party. I was saying
I
think you shouldn't vote unless you have somebody worth voting. I think that's activist as well. I mean, we all have talked about the 91 million that haven't voted in this country, that we need to get engaged. I totally agree we need to get them engaged, but they need to bring candidates to the table. Because the choices that we have aren't cutting it.
We're back to the original conversation, and that is, how does a third, a fourth, a fifth party ever really break through the noise, break through the clutter, break through the barriers that have been created for that candidate to be able to get on people's radar? Now, you know, maybe in a few more years, maybe in a decade or so, you know, social media will be that sort of system by which, you know, mainstream media will no longer have any significant role to play. But the reality today is that the reason candidates are out securing so much money, and really the reason that super PACs are really controlling the campaign messaging today, is because the Supreme Court, in a conservative move, allowed it to happen. That was not a progressive judgment. That was not a liberal judgment. That was a conservative ideology at work. And that's what created that problem for us.
Was it a liberty movement? Hold on. Remember we talked about there's two ways to wage a conservative campaign. One is through force of will, and the other one is through freedom. In the end, wasn't this a free speech decision?
No, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. No, that's not. That's the veneer that was put on top of that decision to try and fool us into thinking that money equals, and that if I have a lot of money, I should be allowed to spend it however I want in a political campaign.
How is money in politics, the way it has been used, not just since Citizens United, the way it has been used by people of all ideologies, only conservative? It is not. It is money. Back to the label.
Bobby, what I said.
Let Greg speak, Bobbert, before I mute you.
But, Bob, whose turn is it?
It's not yours. It's Greg's.
what I said was the Supreme Court decision was a decision that was founded and based in a conservative ideology. The fact that both sides take advantage of it today is absolutely true. No question about it. I don't deny that for a second. And it's why I continue to fight to take the money out of politics. I'm still very committed to that idea. I am perfectly fine with the idea that we silence both the Soroses and the Kochs of the world. I'm perfectly fine with the idea that unions and corporations will have to abide by and play by the same rules. I am totally fine with the notion that Sheldon Adelson and Bill Gates can no longer put money into super PACs so that we don't know who's spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a PAC ad. Now, I get it. You know, the American populace is easily duped. You know, we are suckers. We are, for the most part, individuals who don't spend any time really doing our homework. I'm evidence of that. I'm willing to admit the fact that I don't know everything. And a lot of times I spout off and I don't have all the facts. Everybody does. But the problem becomes, if we're going to make our decisions about who our elected leaders are, and we're going to base it off of 30-second sound bites that control the airwaves, that buy up the media markets, And don't even have – there's no way for a third or fourth or fifth candidate to even have a voice. And presidential debates don't include anyone but the two front runners. Bobby, you're very sensitive to this issue. It's about the money that's in politics. And that money is there because the Supreme Court has been tilted in a conservative direction.
The money was already there. All the Supreme Court did was give it carte blanche. We've been dealing with campaign finance reform since the beginning of time.
It is just another aspect of it. The surprising thing about Citizens United for me was how fast it was decided from Buckley differently, because the Supreme Court in its history until lately has been honoring its decisions unless something major has happened. That what they did in Citizens United, I just call it corrupt. I don't know if it's necessarily conservative. The conservatives, I mean, I guess the liberals like to say it's conservative, but you know, if you're going to be principled, you're going to be principled. I don't want any party. I want, as we all know, I am anti-party, not partisan. And the issue with that is that all the parties tend to be corrupt. If you believe that the Republican Party is absolutely corrupt, the Democratic Party is absolutely corrupt, in my view. There is no argument. The Libertarian Party has been co-opted on so many levels, it's driving me crazy. It's one of the formats that I'm trying to do when it comes to educating the public, because I went
as was the original Coffee Party. What we see now is the Coffee Party has absolutely no resemblance whatsoever to the original Coffee Party.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that is exactly a good point there, because it you lose your way, you know. And you know, listen.
Wait, did I say the Coffee Party? Did I just have a Freudian slip?
Did
I just have a Freudian slip? Did I say the Coffee Party?
You did.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry. I meant the
Bobby
Tea Party.
I
meant the Tea Party. I did not mean the Coffee Party.
Well, actually,
sorry, Annabelle and Eric, if you're listening. We're still hanging in there.
I don't think the Coffee Party is corrupted by money, but I think it's lost its way from its original message. Totally.
But I meant to say the Tea Party. I meant to say that the original Tea Party was co-opted and is nothing at all like what it was when it was started.
It's not. There's like four of them. It's actually, I work with a couple of people from the original Tea Party that are wonderful to talk to, but you are so right. And again, they got co-opted so fast in the money game. It's funny you mentioned that. Before I came to the show, I was trying to support, more discussions about independence and stuff like that. So I looked around for other shows, and before I came to this show, I was listening to a show called Hagman and Hagman, and I was ready to jump out of my car. With some of the things, and they're supposed to be a liberty movement, but what they're doing is they're completely co-opted in their ideology, and they're running commercials for the Tea Party Patriots, and they're horrible when it comes to trying to take over, you know, and run your lives, you know, like you were saying earlier about they profess smaller government, but they want them in your bedroom or et cetera, you know, and that's or they want the ultrasound or all these other wonderful things that, you know, we all fight. You know, the three of us obviously are committed, conscientious people who want to see change. And all I offer to that is that until we take a stance against the corruption of all the parties that are out there, and we open up the election process so more people can be involved and treated equally, it would be, you know, to me, that's the stance. I don't think either party deserves our support. Maybe individuals in the party do, without question. I would say that your guys in Oregon, all of the Democrats in Oregon, I would support if they were in Georgia, without question. And I would not support your one Republican that you have up there, because I've looked at the voting record. At the same time, down here in Georgia, there's a guy running on the Republican ticket that I kind of like, but he can't get away from – he cannot be heard unless he's on the ticket, which is a shame.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, here we are with that problem again. You know,
Bobby, we're all saying the same thing. We all want an environment in which the best and brightest, not the biggest money raisers, are the people who will not only rise to the top, but be available to us as candidates, be viable as candidates, and actually represent us when they get to whatever office it is, whether it's local, state, or national. So, yeah, we're all in agreement that one of the things we need to continue to stay focused on is how do we make the system more pure so that more pure individuals can be our elected leaders. I'm going to continue to fight that fight. I'm not going to stop, but I'm also not going to not vote. I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote for the people who's, at least from as much as I can tell,
whose principles, whose morals, and their ethics are more closely aligned with mine, and that's likely to be the Democrats. Now, I have to tell you, I've never really given the Libertarians a real fair shake, and there's a couple of reasons for that I won't go into. But there's more and more of it that's starting to appeal to me. If the right candidate were to come along, there's no reason why I would not vote for them. But the Republicans have a long uphill battle, as far as I'm concerned, with any American who is more concerned about the general welfare of the country than they are about the general welfare of the corporations. That just seems to me to be where the Republican Party's head is today, and they are more corporatist than anything.
There you go. Greg Rusick, socialist. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Absolutely. There's no question I have.
I'm kidding.
You had that show last week.
We did have a show, and you know what? Good, as they say in Australia, good on you. Can we make that your checkout, Greg, or do you want have another
yeah,
any
that's
final
good. No,
thoughts?
I'm good. Thank you. I thank you so much, guys. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I look forward to Monday evenings, and I wish more people would call in and join the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Greg. Yeah, you and me both. And I have to tell you, Bobby, I have to echo Greg's sentiment on this one. You got to vote, and I'll tell you why you have to vote. It's because you talk about the lesser of two evils. The less people who vote, the more power you are giving over to the lunatic fringe, because they're always going to come out and vote, right? And so we've got to vote it for nothing more than to keep them those guys in check. But you're right. I'm with you that we don't have good choices. Final thoughts, sir.
Well, I mean, you raise a good point. We know that the fringes come out in the primaries. All I can say is that when it comes to what we're talking about, I would echo what you both said as well, and I said earlier, is please bet anybody that you're listening to and thinking that you should vote for, put them under the scrutiny of and hold them to the fire, a lot like the Anti-Corruption Act does, which is a wonderful idea and movement without question, a lot like the Liberty Movement does. I believe parties are corrupt, and I believe that ultimately we're going to get away from them, considering how high the independents are, and make a stand, because if we don't, we're going to have to take what they're giving us, which really sucks. And as always,
yep.
Good show, and glad to be a part of it.
Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate it. That's Bobby Rodrigo and Greg Rusick, our regular contributors. It's always a fun roundtable when those guys are on the phone. So this is Dan Aronson. I'm going to give my little closing spiel here, and I'm going to say this. I have had an epiphany in this show, which is why I love doing this show, because as much as it's a show that some people are out there just listening to, these guys that come here every week and contribute and are wonderful and passionate and intelligent and have the facts at their fingertips, et cetera. They really helped me sort things out, and I really had an epiphany tonight, folks, and I will tell you that this is not about Democrats or Republicans as far as being conservative and liberal. This is about authoritarian government and strong central government versus freedom. That's really what binds the Democrats and the Republicans together is, and what links it back all the way to the beginning of the show, to the funders and what the funders want. Whatever the funders want, whatever issues they are backing, the fact is that they need a strong government, right, that they can then buy and run, but they need a strong government to shove their agendas down our throats. So, boy, maybe I just talked myself into becoming libertarian. I don't know. I'm going to have to think about this long and hard. But that is therein lies the similarity and the reason why I personally, like the other gentleman, would love to see the rise of a third party who understands the balance of socialism, in other words, the good of the whole and the value that it balances off against the good of the individual and striking that correct balance. And when I say individuals, I mean the people. I don't mean corporations. Obviously, the government and the corporations together are something that the people cannot wage war against if both parties, and the only two choices we have the power to wage the war against us, the people, on behalf of the corporations. We can't win that fight. So we have to find a way to balance things out. And if it can come from within one of the two parties, boy, I'd love to hear those people step up to the podiums in the upcoming midterms and tell us how they're going to wage war against business for the people and not vice versa. And when you find somebody like that, I seriously would vote for them. But once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. I want to thank Bobby Rodrigo and Greg Rusick, our wonderful contributors, for coming in here. I want to thank Marianne and all of our guests in the chat room, Tamara, and everybody else for joining us. This has been Dan Aronson. I guess I still am Dan Aronson, but you've been listening to Dan Aronson and Press One for Democracy. Come back every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and for this hopefully stimulating conversation. Don't forget the other coffee party shows. On Thursdays, we have Lunch with Loudon at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Egberto Willis on Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Bud Fields at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, doing political, progressive politics, Tennessee style. Again, thank you very much for joining us. Have a wonderful evening. Look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on a darker day, watching the tide.